Hi, I'm Jennifer Hurwitz, best-selling author of the novella One Happy Divorce, Hold the Bullshit. I'm a blogger, a relationship coach, and I'm the mom of two of the most kick-ass teenage boys around. Raw, authentic, and insightful, this podcast is a no-bullshit slice of reality for anyone in a relationship, ending a marriage, or just curious about the process. Doing Divorce Right, a look at how to divorce happily and respectfully without destroying each other in the process. We'll dish the dirt without taking ourselves too seriously here on Doing Divorce Right podcast. Hey, welcome back to Doing Divorce Right. I'm Jennifer Hurwitz. I'm your host every Tuesday, and I'm thrilled to have this guy in my podcast today. Here with me today, I'm just going to start reading the bio first, and then I'm going to bring him out because you guys will love this. This guy is awesome. I'm excited. Here we go. Okay. David Glass. Thank you. And it's not the David Glass that most of you know, because there are two David Glasses. One David Glass is a friend of mine in Detroit, and this is not the David Glass. So Detroit listeners, it's not that David Glass. This is a different David Glass. This is David Glass, a uniquely qualified family law litigator. He is one of a few select attorneys who is dually trained in law and clinical psychology. He's a PhD, who concentrates on divorce, child custody litigation, and complex asset divisions. Did I get the right, David?
Awesome.
He offers his clients an inside look at an understanding of procedures employed by court-appointed mental health and psychological professionals. He serves as the chair of the firm's family law department. Am I right?
That's right.
Awesome. Hi, David. Come on on. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you. Okay, so first tell me. I have to give you the background. I have a very good friend. His name is David Glass. So when you first reached out to me and we kind of met, online, I thought you were that David Glass. And I'm like, no, it's a different David Glass. So that's why I had to kind of give the whole background, because a lot of my friends that I'm from Detroit are going to think you're that David Glass and you're not. So
that's right. Like, no, I'm in Los Angeles. I grew up in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, outside Philadelphia. So awesome. I'm definitely a different one.
That's awesome. I have lots of friends in Cherry Hill. That's so funny. Well, it's nice to have you. I'm glad you're here. So tell me, you wrote a book.
I did. It's called Moving On, Redesigning Your Emotional, Financial, and Social Life After Divorce.
Okay. I love it. That's awesome, because I'm all about doing that. So I think we have a lot in common. I think it's going to be a great podcast. So when did this book, is the book out right now? You can get it on Amazon?
Yeah. The book has been out for about 2 weeks. It's on Amazon. It hit Amazon bestseller in the first week. So it's off to a fast start.
That's awesome. Congratulations. That's so exciting.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. I didn't realize it just came out 2 weeks ago. So I've got you fresh off the presses.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm thrilled to have you. That's amazing. So you're a bestseller already. That's so exciting. And so tell me a little about it. How did you decide to write this book?
When I got divorced about 10 years ago, it was a relatively easy divorce. My ex-wife and I sat down at the kitchen table and sketched it all out on a yellow pad and agreed and signed, and no attorneys, no mediators, no going to court. And we resolved it relatively quickly. But then I was faced with, what do you do after you're divorced?
And sounds familiar.
And so I went looking for a book 10 years ago. I couldn't find one. And I had it in my mind that maybe I would be the person who could write this book one day. And I held it for a while and finally got around to writing it. And there still really aren't a lot of books on this topic.
Right. And you know what else, David? There are not a lot of books on this topic by men.
Right.
I mean, I'm so proud. I got to say, kudos to you. I'm proud of you, even though I don't really know you. I'm so proud of you, because a lot of women, you know, hit this topic a lot. There are a lot of mommy blogs, a lot of divorce mom blogs, which I write for, but dads don't really, they don't do it. And this is awesome. So good for you. Kudos. So you decided to do this and you did. So here we go. But you touched on a couple of things. I think it's cool, because not only are you a dad, but you're an attorney and a psychologist. Right?
That's right. Yeah, I practiced as a psychologist first. I went to graduate school in a dual degree program. I got my psychology PhD and my law degree at the same time. They shoved, 9 years of study into a 5-year course. And I practiced as a psychologist first for just a short amount of time. It didn't suit my personality. Okay. I'm basically too pushy to be a good psychologist, but pushy enough to be a very good divorce attorney.
That's awesome.
And okay. So I've been practicing divorce law for just over 21 years.
Okay. So you've seen a lot of crap, right? A lot of yuck.
And yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So you've kind of I'm glad that you had a good divorce. That's great. I mean, lots of people don't. I'm lucky too. I had a good divorce. So I was, I got to see the yuck, and I said to myself, I'm going to do this right, basically, which is my first book. So, so tell me, so then that you have, but you have the financial part in there too. So your book is, how does it work? You split up into different parts, or you?
Yeah. So each chapter takes on a different portion of your life and has you look introspectively at what you're doing and what is working and what isn't working. And so the first chapter that we really get into it is your emotional life. Because when people get divorced, it's very easy to come up with the list of all the things that your ex-spouse did wrong that you can do in a minute.
Of course.
You can have a nice long list. But if you ask that person, what did you do wrong in the relationship and how did you contribute to the downfall of your relationship, that's not as easy. And so I recommend that people get into intensive outpatient therapy for, I took a year of it.
Oh, just I love to, that you say that. Say that again.
And so I tell all my clients, and I did it myself, to get into once or twice a week outpatient therapy with a good, caring therapist, and to really focus on what did I do wrong in this relationship and how can I fix myself better so that when I meet my next potential mate, I'm the best person I can be.
David, I love that. I love that because I feel like a lot of people, especially, and including me, I didn't. And that was my biggest mistake in my first book that I wrote about. I didn't take the time to do the work on myself. I jumped into another relationship. It was the biggest mistake I made. And everyone said, no, wait a year. And I didn't listen. And, you know, I also feel like maybe this is, you can touch on this. Is it a male-female thing with the whole therapy thing? Like, why don't a lot of men that I've dated, they just refuse to go to therapy. Why? What do you think that is?
It's like a long-standing bias that men don't need help. Men can work out things on their own. Men aren't interested in examining their emotional lives and are just going to continue doing what they're doing. The problem is that, you know, the rate of divorce for first-time marriages is 50%. For second-time marriages, it's 65%. For third-time marriages, it's 75%.
And what
that statistic tells me is that people keep making the same mistakes.
They
get out of a relationship, they find the new version of the last person that they were in a relationship with. They run through the same behaviors that they've always done, and big surprise, it doesn't work out.
Right.
And so you need that break. I tell all my clients, you got to take a year before you start dating. Focus on your divorce. Focus on your divorced self, focus on your kids, focus on getting yourself back onto terra firma before you start going out there.
Right.
That's the problem. A lot of women all my female clients will take my recommendation, go right into therapy. Yeah. And the male clients, it takes a lot to convince them that this would be something useful. And I tell them my story and how it worked for me and how, despite the fact that I was a psychologist and a divorce lawyer, I still needed a year of work to get myself back out there.
And I tell my clients too, I'm a dating coach, and I tell my clients too all the time, wait a year. I messed up. I screwed up. Listen to me. And they're like, no, I'm good. I'm like, okay, oh, really? And then they show up back on my doorstep. I'm a mess. I should have listened to you. And I'm like, oh, for God's sake. It's not that hard, y'all. Just wait a year. It's, you know, work on yourself. And I feel like you're right. You're so right. That's the best advice there. You need to work on fixing actually recognizing what you did wrong in your first relationship so that you don't do it again in your second one, right?
When I got married to my wife, my dad gave a toast at our wedding, and he said that, you know, that the key to a good marriage is not only finding the right spouse, but being the right spouse.
Oh, I love that.
And that really summed it up, what I'd already done for myself. But he and I had talked about it when I got divorced. But that really sums it up. You're not only looking for the right person, you have to be the right person.
Oh, my God. You're going to love my next book, David. You're going to be so proud of me, I think. Because I did a good job. Yeah, that's right. I love your book. I'm excited to actually, it's coming to my house soon. I was hoping to get it before you were on my podcast so I could read it, but I didn't. I'm excited to read your book. It sounds great. So tell me some more. Keep going. I love this.
So after the first chapter, which is emotional, then the next chapter is looking at your financial life. And in each chapter, I reinforce and teach a creative problem-solving model that I took from my years as a therapist, where first you have to identify there's a problem. Then second, you need to generate as many potential solutions as possible without editing yourself. So without saying that's stupid or that's silly or that won't work, or you have to just generate a dozen possible fixes for the problem you identified. Then you look through each of those dozen alternatives and then say, if I did this, what would happen next?
Oh, that's good.
And by going through that third step, then you pretty much knock out most of those 12 results, and one or two come to the top as the best things to do. And then you have to jump in and you have to try one of those two alternatives.
Okay.
So, and I encourage people, too many people get stuck. I talk about sitting in a mud puddle. You're sitting in a puddle of mud. You're uncomfortable. Your pants are wet. Your butt is itching, but you're not ready to move on and to step out of that puddle. And I tell them, you just got to pick a choice, try it. If it works, great. And if it doesn't work, you circle back, you generate another dozen alternatives, or you just go back to your second choice and try something else. The tragedy isn't making a poor choice. The tragedy is sitting and remaining without making any choice.
Right, exactly. I actually have, that's really funny. I have a really close friend who I feel like that's where she is. She's stuck. She doesn't know what to, you know, she's got divorced. It's been a year and she just doesn't, your book is going to be, I'm going to buy it for her. Because she doesn't know what to do. She doesn't know what choice to make. So I feel like that's a great thing that you're doing. Like, I get that. It gives people an alternative what to do next. Like, I just feel like some people just don't know what to do. They don't have a choice to make, you know?
Yeah.
And it's great.
And so in financial things, for example, so in most cases, someone's paying support, someone's receiving support. Okay. The person who's paying support says they don't have enough money to pay it. And the person receiving it saying it's not enough money to live on. Mm. And both of those parties have to create a new budget. You can't live on your pre-marriage, your marriage budget post-divorce. You've got to figure out a new budget. And so sit down and figure it out. Where are you spending unnecessary money? What really matters to you? Do you need a $5,000 rented house or can you get a $4,000 rented house and save yourself some money? And looking at each one of the decisions you make on a monthly basis will force you to say, I don't need that. Like, for example, I got divorced. I had a $187 a month cable bill and I never watched TV.
Me too. That's so funny.
And my girls used, they used at the time YouTube and they were looking at Netflix. And so I got rid of cable and it's not a huge savings, but not spending $187 a month starts adding up.
Yes, yeah. It does. Yes, it does. And I think that another thing too, is that people don't realize you're never going to have the same lifestyle. I don't care if you were, you know, a millionaire, you weren't, you were nothing, you lived in a trailer. It's never going to be the same when you were divorced as when you're married is when you're divorced, no matter what. So you have to make changes no matter where you were to no matter where you're going to be, right? I mean, it's going to change. Something's going to have to give. So get used to that, right? I mean, that was a big wake-up call for me. I was like, oh, you know, everyone kept saying, well, you should be in the same lifestyle you were in before. I guess what? I'm not. You know, it's like,
right.
And you're just not going to be. So you're so right about that. I needed to make even the smallest changes. Same thing I did. Cable. I never watch my TV. I have week on, week off with my boys. The week my boys aren't here, I don't turn on my television. Why do I need cable in my house when they're not even here for the whole week? And I'm sitting here on my, you know, I binge watch Netflix on my, you know, you're totally right about that. It's great advice.
And what you just mentioned, I mean, it's the key to each chapter of the book. It's you can either continue looking backwards at what you used to have or the mistakes you used to make or the problems you used to have, or even looking at that other person that you're no longer involved with, or you can turn around 180 degrees and look at a wide open horizon and say, what do I want to do next?
Right.
And it's that turning around, facing forward, and then taking those first steps that's going to give people the power and the good feeling that I can change every area of my life.
Right. Now, can I ask you a personal question? You are remarried, sure. Right?
I am.
So there is hope.
Oh yeah, it absolutely is. And the crazy story I have is that after being in therapy for a year, my therapist started saying to me, well, when are you going to start dating? And I wasn't ready to start thinking about it. The very next session, I had to be in court at the time my normal therapy session was. And so I had a replacement. I had another time and I thought it was Wednesday at 1 o'clock. So I showed up at 12:45 and there was someone waiting in the therapist waiting room. And that's never supposed to happen because there's only supposed to be one person there.
Right.
And it was this wonderful, attractive, outgoing woman who I had at this, you know, we talked for about 15 minutes. Then the therapist came out and pointed to me and said, you're here too early, and then took her in. And so I walked around the block for an hour and I came back and I said to the therapist, you know, that woman I just met out there, I know you can't say anything. It's a different patient, but that's someone I might be interested in dating. And then we went on with my session. And so then on the Friday after, my therapist left me like a cryptic voicemail message on my cell phone. She said, you know, that person you were wondering about, maybe you should give her a call. I can't believe I even told you this. Goodbye.
Oh, and she hung up.
And so I looked up the woman, and I found her email address, and I sent her an email late on Friday. And it turned out she didn't even have a smartphone at the time. She was only checking email at work. She had left work, and I didn't hear from her all weekend. And I thought, oh, well, I guess, you know, she wasn't interested. Right. And on Monday, she got back to work, and she emailed me at 10. Oh, I'm so glad to hear from you. I was thinking about you as well. And I got so excited at getting this email, I just drove over to her work, and I called her from the sidewalk out front, and I said, I'm here. And we met, and we had lunch, and we had one date, we had two dates. And that's who I ended up getting engaged to and married to, and we're 8 years post marriage now, completely happy.
That's awesome. Does she have kids as well? I mean, do I mean to? But...
No, she didn't have any children.
That's
she had two.
The best.
she had two dogs that I had to get you. So I had okay. never been a pet owner, but now I'm a babies. Big dog person. My really? Girls were 10 and 12, and so they were preteen, and that's where they start getting difficult, girls.
Yes, I know. Tell me about it. Yeah, I have two boys. You're lucky.
Yeah. Yeah, and so and so we had a lot of things to work about in the first 2 years of our relationship, but we worked through each thing on a step-by-step basis. Sure, and honestly, every year of our relationship has gotten better and more richer because we did all the hard work in the first year
right,
or two.
Right. That's awesome. And you know, it's funny. We could go on for days, but I mean, it's one of those things, like, I feel like I always say to my boys, just, you know, find an orphan. You know, because I'm like, it's so much easier when they don't have, you know, when you have boys, when they don't have, like, you know, daughter-in-laws, I don't have to deal with it. So I'm like, just marry, you know. But it's like the same thing when I tell my friends, just my clients, I'm like, just find a guy who, you know, who doesn't have kids.
Yeah.
So then you can blend families. It's much easier. But it's because
absolutely.
It's so difficult. It's one of the hardest things. And, you know, it's a difficult thing. My boyfriend and I, we have the, you know, we're not blending. I won't blend. I just won't do it. It's one of my things. I'm like, it's just really hard. We've been dating for 2 years now, and our kids have never met. And people are like, you're crazy, Jen. You're crazy. I'm like, no, I'm just not doing it. I'm just not. So I could go on for days, but it's one of those things. You know, some people, like, they do and it works and good for them. And other people, I've heard, you know, the horror stories, and it's just, it is what it is. So that's awesome. I'm glad. So everyone, there is hope. Listeners, you can get remarried and be happy. See?
And then there's- Right. And honestly, it just takes some time. It takes you being in the right place and then being open to new experiences.
Right.
And part of that year in therapy for me was being open to new experiences, not thinking that I knew the plan, not thinking I knew the right way.
Right.
And part of my therapy was opening up and looking around in a more wide way. And that's how I met her. That's how I was open to it. And then honestly, as we worked out our problems, we got into pre-marriage counseling.
I love
because
that.
Because I didn't want to wait till we were married for the issues to come up.
That's
important,
David.
And we did 12 weeks of therapy where we just brought up, what are the things we're worried about? And so, you know, my wife was worried about finances, and I was worried about, you know, how are my girls going to accommodate? And then she was worried about religion. And we took each issue on a piece-by-piece basis, figured out what our compromise were. And the most important thing we learned was not to be in competition.
I love that.
And it's something I completely didn't realize was going on in my first marriage, but it's, you know, you come home, you both come home from work, you're both tired, you both had a bad day. Who's going to be the person who gets cared for and who does the caring?
Oh, this could be my favorite podcast.
and the marriage therapist we were working with had a carved marble egg on her desk, and she would push it from one hand to the other, and she would say only one person can be holding the egg at any one time.
Oh.
And she said, you know, who is more broken up, who's having more trouble that day? That's the person who gets the attention from the other person.
Right, only one
the person. Yeah, and the person who's giving the care realizes, I've got problems, but I'm going to put them in a Ziploc bag. I'm going to hold on to them for an hour, a half a day, a day, but we will get back to me. It's just right now, my partner needs me more than I need him or her. And so just learning that not to be in competition has solved so many problems, because it's, you know, every once in a while, we'll both come home, we both have issues, and one will say to the other, who's holding the egg?
Oh, I love that. I'm going to use that with my boyfriend.
Yeah, and you just decide, and then that's how you're going to treat the other person. You take care of one person, knowing that you're going to be cared for later, and it resolves over 90% of the issues.
I'm going to use that, because I feel like I'm always he's always taking care of the egg. Like, I feel like I'm always the problem. I'm always a fret, and I feel like I never take care of the egg. So I need to I think you're totally, that's an awesome analogy that I'm going to, this podcast is awesome, David. I feel like I'm like a new person now. I don't want to end this forever. This is awesome. Is this all in your book too?
Yeah, this is all these anecdotes and pieces. There's a chapter on your social life, on looking at your friends and deciding, am I friends with this person just because I've always been friends with them, or am I gaining something useful from this friendship? And if you're not, you've got to make room for some friends who that you can connect with. And so yeah, I looked at my list of friends, and there were friends that I'd known since high school, and we were talking about the same old, you know, from like the Bruce Springsteen song, The Glory Days, and I just realized I'm not getting anything from this. So you let those people slip away, and then in return, I've made friends that I can be honest with, that I can I can talk about the things that are bothering me. I can talk about the things that I haven't succeeded at, and they're not gonna come back negatively. I mean, I'm gonna get some support from them.
Yeah, and they're gonna fill your bucket, right?
And so you look at your social life, and then you look at your dating life, and I encourage people to write a list. This is what I'm looking for in my next mate.
Yes, I call them non-negotiables in my book. Yes,
right.
You're not gonna settle for it, right?
And if you look at the list that you had or you should have had when you first got married to your prior spouse. And I got married when I was 25, and my list had nothing to do with the list that I created when I was 41 and met my wife. And there was 10 things, and none of the 10 things even matched. And
isn't that funny?
That's part maturation. It's part meeting different people. It's part being more confident in yourself. But whatever it is, if you don't have your list, you really don't know what you're looking for.
I totally agree with you. I love this. I totally agree. And do you think that I always think to myself, like, if we could just have two people. Like one person for like to raise our kids and start with, and then the next person when you get older and all those, you mature and you become more confident. Wouldn't that be great? It's kind of like what happened. You know, you had your one person and then I totally agree with you. All this stuff, it makes so much sense to me. Do you feel like your friendships when you got divorced, they changed? Like you lost friends, you gained friends? Because my friendships totally changed with my divorce.
Absolutely.
It just shocked me. I was so blown away by the change in my friendships. It really just blew me away.
Yeah. And in the end, it's not that people treat it as a big deal. Who are your friends and are you still friends with people? Yeah. But if you're making a conscious choice, who do I want to spend my time with? And then you let some people go. It's not a tragedy. It's you deciding who do I want to spend my time with? Who do I get good feelings from? Who do I enjoy being with? And I changed a lot of my friends.
Yeah, me too.
And even post-divorce, I had one set of friends. I had three male friends who I called my three advisors. And one had been divorced and remarried, and one had never been married, and one was married but unhappy. And so I'd been out of the dating market for almost 20 years. And I would ask them, well, how should I do this? How should I do that? And each of them had a different opinion.
Right.
And I ended up following none of their opinions. But for a while, it was nice to have this little group that I would discuss things with. And then I began telling my wife, who I was then dating, I have these three guys. And she'd say, well, what did each of them say? And she told me none of them are right.
I love her. Essentially, that's great.
Yeah, we came up with our own rules. Like, you know, there was a rule: after a date, don't call the next morning, wait until a day later so you don't look too anxious or too interested or whatever these ridiculous rules were. And I told her about them. And she said, my wife said, I can't stand waiting for the next idea. Like, if we have a good date, I want to know
what we're doing
next.
Yeah, I'm with
her. So we made a rule: at the end of each date, we're going to make our next date. And so you don't have to wait for me to call. You don't have to worry about calling me. We know what our next thing is.
I like your wife.
She's absolutely amazing and down to earth and an amazing problem solver and a great partner.
You sound like a great match. She sounds fabulous. And it sounds like you have like a kind of little screenplay thing. If you ever need a screenwriter, I could write your little screenplay over there. I've got one of my own, but you sound like you got a little TV show thing with your three guys and the whole thing. I don't know. It sounds good. Yeah. Your life sounds great to me. I think your book sounds awesome. I think your whole thing. This could be my favorite podcast I've done in a long time. I've got to be honest.
Oh, that's great.
I do. I think it all sounds really, I like strategy. I like when people give me ideas that actually work. And I like when I can give my listeners like hope and things to use, right? So I feel like you have things that actually may be helpful instead of a bunch of woo-woo crap. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's if you read the book, it's a lot of it sounds like common sense, but the problem is most people don't use common sense, or maybe
common sense
isn't very common, but it lays out in a very systematic way. And you have to force yourself to be somewhat systematic if you aren't that way naturally, right, to solve any sort of problem. And I talk about, you know, getting a big piece of paper and making a chart and putting positives on one side and negatives on the other. And
I do that every day. I feel like I have pro-con lists for everything.
Yeah. And it's, whether you're doing it on the computer or on an old fashioned piece of paper, whatever you're doing, if you don't get it down somehow, you're not going to go through the process of stepping through each of these steps.
Right. And I feel like a lot of times people are they're stuck in their own negativity, and that everything's a no, everything, the no for everything, or an answer for everything is a no, an answer for everything, a reason why not. And sometimes people just need help with a yes, like, no, you can do this and it can happen. And, you know, especially when you're just divorced and you're just in that shit place. And, you know, so I think your book sounds awesome.
And the bottom line is that divorce is a second chance for happiness for everyone. You've been unhappy. Now you've got a relatively clean slate, and you can decide about each area of your life. What works, what doesn't work, what do I want to keep, what do I want to let go, and what do I want to build going forward? And if you take that opportunity and you remain open to all of the options, I guarantee you're going to be more happy. You're going to live a more fulfilling life.
Well, you know what? I think that's awesome. And I think that we have a lot in common with our ideas. And, I'm glad you were here. I appreciate it. I appreciate you coming on. And if there's anything I can do in your show notes, and my VA Nicole's going to plug you, and we're going to make sure that I have, where can we find you, David? Where can we find everything about you? Do you have your one solid website? Do you have a couple? What's going on?
The book is at movingonbook.com. And my divorce website is glassfamilylaw.com. And they're cross-linked, so you'll find anything at either one of those sites. I have to tell you, I'm looking forward to reading your new book, and then finding out what some ideas, and then applying it to my post-divorce life and my wife and our new family. It looks like it's going to be an amazing book.
Thank you. But I don't think you're going to need my book, because it's How to Stay Married. And I think you're doing a great job. I don't think you're gonna, my book is actually for people contemplating getting a divorce, and where I was when you don't need it. You're just fine. Mine is for people who are just thinking about it and how to stay married. So you don't need me, David. You're excellent.
Okay.
But read it anyway and give it to a friend who might be thinking about it. So that's
it.
I loved having you. I loved it. I think you're awesome. And I'm going to plug your book all over the place. I can't wait to get it and read it myself and tell you what I think. And, I appreciate you coming today. Thank you. Thank you. And you can find me, everywhere, all over the place, but really it's easy at www.jenniferhurwitz.com. I'm on Insta and Twitter and everywhere else. And every single week on Tuesday, I'm here at Doing Divorce Right. Thank you so much, you guys, for being here and listening all the time and supporting everything I do. Peace, love, and truth.
Thanks for listening to Doing Divorce Right. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe, recommend, rate, and review on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Overcast, or wherever you get your episodes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.